Welcome to Marvel Vision, a podcast about Marvel, the MCU, and right now, Daredevil Born Again. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin, and I am Born Again.
I'm Pete.
And we are going to be talking about episode 2 of the Disney Plus series, Optics. And if you haven't watched it yet, go watch it, because we're going to spoil it right now with a brief recap. But our two trains that we're following, Matt Murdock gets a new client who is secretly, he doesn't know it at the time, but a vigilante known as White Tiger, Hector Ayala, who is in the wrong place at the wrong time. That leads to a cop falling in front of the subway and getting killed. So he brings that to trial with all the complications that ensue there. Meanwhile, Mayor Wilson Fisk is learning a little bit about what his job entails. And per the title, Optics. Also, it's Optics because I don't know if you know this, Daredevil can't see. So it's like,
yes, that's the hardest
thing going on there. It's pretty crazy. There's a lot of other balls that are in the air here, including the relationship deepens with Heather Glenn, and she gives a book talk at the local bookstore, the Inkwell, with a couple of folks attending that I'm sure we can talk about. And yeah, there was at least one other thing that happens with the cast, but that's the main thing. Just to do a little bit of a, yes. Commissioner Gallo. We find out more about that. And we probably need to get into it in terms of the cheesesteak beat with Pete in a moment here. But first, I want to do a little bit of a heat check. We got some feedback about the beginning of our first episode that maybe there was a bit of arguing. There was, you know, people were like, okay, maybe move past that. But I wanted to see, I know we're never going to move past Foggy, R.I.P. in heaven. Did I do that right?
Who are we talking about?
A little froggy that I found in the park.
Oh, the guy from last episode who passed. Sorry.
Yeah.
I feel like I've moved
Come
on.
Come on, dude. Put a little respect on it.
So here's my question, though, because this...
A little foggy.
I mean, I know how I felt about this episode. I was thrilled about this episode because I liked the first episode. It was good pilot. But this one, I felt like, oh my God, we're moving into trial procedural with an aerial A plot and a B plot again. As a TV guy, the fact that we're getting an actual TV show here, I was like tingling excited that we were getting the thing that I think is one of the aspects. It doesn't need to be the only thing, but like one of the things that I kind of hoped a Daredevil show would be. And it was sporadically through this three-season run. But I thought this was great. I was very thrilled about this. But how are you guys feeling?
I mean, I echo your feelings about it.
Get it? Yeah.
Nice. Good. Yes. Feels like a TV show. Yeah. And I'm going to continue to punish Pete for his love of Foggy.
Put him in some sort of cage.
Yes.
With his fist Jones. I don't know.
Nice. Good.
What happened?
This does feel like a TV show. For all its positives and negatives, like it does feel like there's a lot going on. We're laying out very procedural steps forward. It's not overpacked like a lot of Marvel shows. It feels like they're just doing stuff, but it's happening in the episode rather than sprawling all across the series so far. There's some humor here in a way that I think is working. It's not just the Marvel, like sort of Tony Stark style of comedy. It feels like genuine character-driven stuff, like the Dracar Noir cops line in the middle, I thought was really fun. Like, there's some actual tone here. And then the fight at the end, I was like, oh, yes. This was you feel his rage. You feel him knowing he shouldn't do this, and then he does it. And that's such a Daredevil thing. And then him screaming at the end, I thought that was really nice and just really landing this episode. You know, the second episode is sort of the real pilot in a lot of ways with TV, because, and I don't think it was quite the same for this show because they probably just made them all. But in most shows, you make the pilot and then you start making the series. And this had that second pilot, like a good second pilot idea that then pushes into the series in a great way.
Yeah, I felt like pretty upset about the first episode, and for people upsetting me for being so upset, apologies. But it's hard when you're a comic book fan and you're full of rage. I think that I was kind of had my arms crossed at this episode, But I was pleasantly surprised by the end. It had a lot of oh shit moments just before the kind of fade to black. So I ended up having a great time. I'm still mourning. But yeah, I was impressed with where we got to. And also, it was kind of funny because that whole White Tiger fight, I was like, why are they, this is so well choreographed. And this dude's, they're kind of lighting this guy and the camera angles are like giving him the main character energy. I was like, why are we putting so much into, he's the White Tiger. Oh, okay, that makes sense. So that really paid off.
Well, and just to keep going on this particular track that you're talking about, Pete, I also thought just from a structural perspective, they're doing a really good job of not just paralleling Matt and Wilson throughout the episode, but also throwing Hector in there as a very direct parallel to what's going on, not just with Matt, but both of them in terms of mask off, being a good person, who you are in the mask and outside of the mask. All of those things that are going on there that the show is playing with, I think are readily on display. They're not particularly subtle about any of them, but that's okay. We don't need subtlety in a superhero show as long as it's well acted and well written. And so far, I really think it is.
I mean, fixing the pothole was kind of hilarious.
Yes. I think that was played for laughs, and it's kind of surprising to get a Kingpin scene where he's like, I'm going to fill in a hole.
Well, him like in the car about to lose his shit and then like getting out in traffic and you think, oh, God, is this going to be road rage? And he's just like, you over there, fix this hole. And he's like posing by it. And then he walks away. I was like, are you walking back into your car? Are you going to get back into traffic? Like, where the fuck are you going?
I mean, a couple of things on that scene. The size of the hole was insane. Like, I was like, "What is this? What people think potholes are in New York? That's
sinkholes, just giant."
Like that was it was over. It was larger than one lane of traffic. I was like, "Who production designed this hole?" Because it's
probably they had a hole, and they're like, "Ah, I got to make it bigger. This is not big enough."
Yeah.
And also, so they're going to fill it all in, and then everybody's going to drive over the wet concrete.
Yeah. But also, you have to put in a bunch of junk and then you just put the concrete or pavement on top. So I was like, what are they getting? Like nougat? What's going to go in this hole to fill it for Thick Wilson? So that was funny. And this whole scene played, like we were talking last episode about the real world politic of this and sort of like the original Mayor Fisk series was very like Trump analog back when it was made, and that was in Trump's first term. We're back in a Trump term, and this felt very like a very Trumpy scene where he's like, what's this? I'll go just yell at someone to fix a hole when they definitely don't have the stuff there to do it. The guy's like, oh sure, and he's like probably panicking trying to do it. And so is the show going to go, this is written however many months ago, is the show going to go that hard like that? And do we like that?
I really think it is so far in a crazy way, because I remember, I don't know, I don't want to call him out because I'm definitely paraphrasing, but I remember we talked to Charles Soule, who wrote the Mayor Fisk storyline, about this a bunch of times. And, you know, it's writing it for Marvel, which is owned by Disney, and they want to walk the line. And he was always very careful about like, well, no, this is, you know, Mayor Fisk. And always Marvel is going to reflect the world outside of your window, et cetera, et cetera. But reading it, it was like, yeah, this is very Trumpy with a Y at the end. This is Trump. Like, I think this is straight up Trump that they're doing here, down to he was a real estate developer in New York. So if they're going to have a character who is the kingpin who doesn't know much about politics, they drive in. My favorite line of the episode was, this was Daniel Blake, Michael Gandolfini, saying, you got Staten, you don't need Manhattan. Sorry.
Which, yeah.
His whole tone is very funny, but like he's clearly a Trump supporter. And he's like, I'm a fanboy. I love you. This is great. Do whatever you're going to do. I don't know about policy. It's cool. You're just cool. You're really sticking it to the system. Like all the stuff. They're slow playing it right now because, like Pete said, you expect, knowing the Kingpin, that he's going to come out and start beating heads. But instead, he does this very empty thing, which, like you were saying, Justin, is a very Trumpy thing. So, like, they're not getting into the racism. They're not getting into the deportation. They're not getting into the much, much darker parts. But they are certainly skirting a very direct parody of a man who was a major figure in New York real estate for years and years that everybody hated, that suddenly became president of the United States.
Well, and I like that they're showing the behavior without commenting on it. Mm-hmm. It's really just like meant for us to see this character and watch him do what he does. And that's a smart way to play it for the story, to protect the narrative from like it being too satirical or too like targeted.
Yeah. So, and I mean, not to stay on this too much longer, though we certainly can if we want to. I was talking last episode about the character. There's Sheila, Daniel Blake, and is it Buck, I think, or like Duke, the other guy who's working in the office with them at the mayor's office. And they keep shutting Sheila down all the time. Yeah. I do think it's very pointed to have three white guys, not to talk about it on our podcast, but three white guys, but three white guys over talking a black woman who is trying to keep everything on the rails and on the level. That again is very Trumpy, but that's also very society as well. And I appreciate that. That was, whether it was true or not, what Stan Lee and others always pushed about Marvel Comics. But we very rarely, if at all, got any nod towards in the Marvel Cinematic Universe entirely. You know, I bring up this example all the time, but they always talked about Winter Soldier like, oh, it's a paranoid thriller. But it's not. You know, it's about like Hyderabad. And that's pretty much it. There's nothing really parallel there. And we talked a lot about with Captain America Brave New World, how it was set in a political realm, but not saying anything specific politically, to then have this show following directly on the heels, which at least in the early, like we're talking about, is like slow playing it a little bit, but it is readily apparent in everything that's happening, is very refreshing and very welcome, I would say.
Yeah, agreed.
I don't know. It's just weird for me I understand what you're saying, and you know, you definitely have a lot of valid points. It's just weird to me to, because like Kingpin is such a, I haven't really thought about this, but I just feel like it's weird comparing him to Trump, because for me, I feel like there are some differences, and Trump is very scary, but I'm not worried about him fighting somebody. You know what I mean? Where I feel like D'Onofrio can get
the guy who suddenly backed down from tariffs twice because Canada or Mexico were like, we're not going to do this.
Getting topical, Alex.
I'm just saying that, like, I'm scared that when he was going to get out of the car, he was going to start hurting people. You know what I mean? Where I feel like that's not a thing with Trump. Also, he dresses a lot nicer than Trump does.
Well, it's not a direct statement.
Going back to the first episode, it was a very little thing that they didn't spend too much time on because they barely did the mayor campaign at all. But the whole slogan of Fisk can fix it. There's people wandering around with like blue hats with that on it. And there's no way not to think about the Make America Great Again hats or the protests at the end where people are like, well, right at the beginning of the episode, we open up with Fisk giving an address on New Year's, and he's throwing
weird time to give an address, right?
It is a weird time to give an address. That
I was like, nobody does that.
The mayor goes to the New Year's ball and helps drop it, but is not like, I'm on every screen in the city making my omelets. But I think, again, what they're doing there, and I appreciate this, it's through a superhero lens, is he calls out Man with a Skull on his chest, a hero who dresses like a spider, very generous. Nobody thinks Spider-Man dresses like a spider.
Yeah, and I wouldn't then call him dressing.
Yeah, but we get it. It's nice to have a Spider-Man reference. And then Man with horns and a devil costume. Like, I do think they're getting towards the level, because I think we know, based on the comics, the storyline they're heading towards here, vigilantes are an analog for othered group, and he is using them at throwing hatred at them and planting hatred of them to distract from the more diabolical things that he's going to do as mayor of New York. So in that also, I do think it is an analog for Trump or any sort of wannabe dictator who is using fascism as a mask for their own capitalism.
Do you think it was weird when, because he said, oh yeah, and the guy with the horns, and I was like, Loki? Is he talking about Loki? I never remember, like, Daredevil has those
spider
little
hero. Do you mean Tarantula?
Yeah. Yeah, he's got little horns.
Yeah, he's got. I always forget about the little horns. You know, yeah.
That scene also had maybe my favorite line of the episode. Someone in the crowd is like, what am I going to do, move to Boston? No one thinks that. No one in New York has ever thought, well, I guess I got to move to Boston.
Yeah.
Is the writer of this episode from Boston? That's the most Boston shit I've ever heard.
So let me throw something out on that. Because
it's New York or Boston. I'm really going to go one or the other.
You're really going into the cobblestones last episode.
Yeah. Yep.
They did film this show in New York. I looked it up just to double check. They filmed it.
Yeah, but not that shot. Show me the street that has those nice cobblestones, bro.
Here's my point. There's a great article in Time Out New York where they break down all the different shooting locations. Just like with the first three seasons that didn't actually really film in Hell's Kitchen at all, they filmed all over New York City. That includes Brooklyn and Queens and everything. And there are a lot of areas like that. But also, just like the first season, and I'm sure there is an exception or two here, the writing staff is in L.A. So they're writing it in L.A., but they're writing it about New York. So my point being, yeah, they're going to get some of that stuff wrong. But in terms of actually shooting it, it is New York locations.
And there are cobblestones. Like Red Hook has a ton of cobblestone.
This is not about the cobblestones. I was just... Yeah.
But you brought up the cobblestones.
It was about moving to Boston.
We're doing, right?
Yeah, definitely. Much safer there.
We're moving backwards in the episode, I do want to, on a more serious note, call out something and then segue in it to talk about the shooting of the show. But we do start off with a title card that says, In Loving Memory of Kumar De Los Reyes, who is the actor who plays Hector Ayala / White Tiger, who very sadly passed away from cancer in 2023. I'm going to say like a little backstory in terms of the production and then bring it around back to this. But like we talked about before, they filmed 6-ish episodes, like not all of the episodes, but most of the episodes in early 2023, and then shut down filming, rejiggered the entire show, and then came back, reshot a good bunch of it, and then redid it starting in early 2024. So that means that Kumar De Los Reyes passed away between the first 6 episodes and the rest of the filming of the show, including the entire pilot, and I believe the finale or the last 2 episodes and chunks of it throughout. So the reason I bring this up, not beyond like it just being sad, but it's kind of fantastic that they were able to keep so much of his performance in this episode, and it's so good throughout.
It really is.
So,
yeah.
He's a great actor.
He's great. It's a tragedy that he passed away. It's super sad. He was mid-50s. But just as a tribute to him, beyond having the In Loving Memory at the beginning, I was just really, really pleased to see how much of an arc they were able to give him through this episode and presumably the next one as well.
While we're talking about stuff in the beginning, I would like to talk about...
Hold on. I think Justin was going to say something about this topic.
The one we're talking about before we move on. We don't get rewarded for moving quickly through topics, I would argue.
We don't get a speed bonus on this podcast? Yeah. Which podcast do we get a speed bonus on?
On the stack, definitely. We haven't earned it yet. But what I was going to say is, like, I really like this story. Like, Pete, you were talking earlier about the filming of the fight episode or the fight piece at the beginning of the episode. And I really like that. We sort of surprised ourselves on it. And then, like you're saying, Alex, we got a full arc here that I think we're going to get multi arcs. And that, again, speaks back to the procedural nature of this. That is really nice. And to have someone being a hero all through their life was nice too, when so much of Daredevil's constant consternation is like, should I do it now and be a hero? When this guy's just like being that hero. And I like that's a nice counter position between the two characters.
I will say there was a little bit of total dissonance when in the middle of the episode, they're like, of course he doesn't have his magic amulet. And I was like, we all know this. This is.
Yeah, everybody knows that.
I guess. I mean, it's fine. It's a superhero world, but particularly because they are taking a more grounded approach here, to throw that in the middle, I was like, what?
Well, especially a line like that is sharp.
Okay, nerds. All right, we covered it real quick, so calm the fuck down.
I feel like
his amulet.
they were leaning into it by saying that. And it's in the courtroom scene, or the judge's chamber scene, where he's like, the state knows that he's that White Tiger's a superhero, knows his identity. I'm like, well, how is he not just being jailed for that? I don't wonder if they're going to come back on that reality. But then when Matt's like, well, my client was not wearing his magic amulet, I was like, what? You could have said this 9 other ways that wouldn't be so antennas up for us folks.
But yeah, it was pretty funny.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Big shout out to you for making it through the hectic holiday season. This new year, get clean, quality, pregnancy nutrient support off your to-do list, including Ritual's best-selling essential prenatal multivitamin, designed with 12 traceable key ingredients to support a healthy pregnancy. With big changes coming up, take the small steps now and start today with 30% off a 3-month supply at ritual.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
All right, Pete, you want to go back to the Marvel flip, I assume.
I just want to one time talk about it real quick.
Oh, okay, just this podcast. This is the only time you're going to talk about it.
Well, for this podcast, I haven't talked about it yet. So I'm just saying, like, we get a Marvel TV kind of flip here. It's very fast, but I do appreciate we get some comic book stuff in the flip. So I felt pretty good about that.
Great. Nice. Always great. Good to have a flip check 21 flip minutes check. Into the episode.
Your flip checks, Pete, are literally always the same. Pretty good. Pretty good flip.
Not always. Sometimes he complains that they're showing Marvel zombies in an animated show.
Yeah, exactly. I don't like it when they don't reference the comics. That's why we're all here. You got to pay homage to why we're all here.
Sorry, comics. I'm a little foggy on comics.
I don't appreciate that. Too soon.
Not soon enough, I say. I did want to loop back to something that you said earlier, Pete, when we were talking about the politics of it, is there's another aspect here that is not the Trump thing that I think they are starting to seed in here really nicely. They had it like very briefly with one shot of a tattoo in the first episode. But here we get to see another Punisher tattoo on a cop. Yeah. Plus, we get the whole blue line thing. They're all standing there in the trial. They're all looping around, you know, circling the wagons around their guys, even though their guys clearly were in the wrong. And as we find out by the end of the episode, the guy that they were beating up was this informant named Nicky Torres. So we're also dealing with not just a little bit of like Blue Lives Matter type thing going on here, and just the corruption of the police department, which is like baked into the whole Daredevil thing. But it certainly seems like we're starting to seed something that is both played into the comics and into the real world, which is the impact of the Punisher on the police force.
Yeah.
And that, knowing that the Punisher is coming down the pike, is very interesting. And again, I laud them for like, I mean, we'll see how it pans out, but like, I laud them for delving into this.
It's gritty. It's much grittier than I thought they were going to go, and it makes it more complicated for Matt. And I think he expresses that at the end with his scream. He's like, this is only going to be a problem I am deeply incapable of solving.
And it was also weird how in like the BBB report there, where it was like, the cops are super important to the city, Mayor Fisk. I was like, well, that was out of nowhere, that line. Like, why is a young reporter kind of talking to Mayor Fisk? Like, I appreciated her hot question beforehand, but then following up with how important the cops are to the city seemed a little kind of out of left field. So I feel like that was like also a kind of comment on this thing we're building towards with when it comes to the police.
Well, but it might be BB trying to get sort of in the mechanism to break open this story that we're talking about right now. You know, it's in the scene is presented with her sort of cozying up to Fisk for just to like have a job maybe, or to get to have her paper or her media outlet succeed. But I think there might be a much more sort of in line with her father, deep investigative, uncover a darker truth here that I think is really a really interesting spot for her to be in as well.
I do have questions about how her media empire works, because mostly what we see is her doing like relatively light, mad on the street stuff that seems like maybe she posted on YouTube, but most likely it's on TikTok. Is there more to it? But I don't know.
Also shot in such a hipster format. Mm-hmm. Like it's shot like an indie, like NYU indie film.
Yeah, her logo is, it's all.
So like, it's not a scrappy TikTok thing. It's more of an art news thing. It feels like.
You know what it's very similar to, but I do think it's better, but it's very similar to the Eddie Brock report that they did in the Venom movies, where he's a hard hitting reporter. But again, does not seem to ask any questions, just sort of like talks about things with his pad in his hand. It's just a general misunderstanding of how news works. But I don't know. I like the character and I like what you're talking about, Justin, because, you know, justice for Ben Urich. So hopefully we're headed in that direction. Also, while we're
Uncle Ben.
Uncle Ben. There you go. Let's talk about the Gallo thing. That's the chief of police who is going to retire. The commish. What?
I mean, the way he tees off on Kingpin, I was like, bro, cool it, dude. But I really like that scene, and man, did the comeuppance came fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought all of this stuff was great. I don't know that actor, but I thought he was really good as the police commissioner. There were big Gotham City vibes coming off of that whole storyline, which I really enjoyed. And the eventual outcome with the cheesesteak and revealing the secret child, I thought was really well done. But Pete, we do need to go over to you on the cheesesteak beat. There's a lot of discussion about best cheesesteaks. He comes down on D'Angelo's, but then says it's gross later. Over to you.
Well, they talked about Gino's, they talk about Pat's, they talk about Angelo's, and I think it's, you know, those are big ones. But really, when you live in Philly, you find the grungiest, shadiest kind of place that make the greatest cheesesteaks. So, you know, there's these big name ones, but, you know, once you start kind of really and discovering these places, it's always the kind of like corner store, no name ones that have the best cheesesteaks, I find.
Do you have a favorite place, though?
I do. And it's just like I know the corners of the that it's on. I don't even know the name of it because it doesn't have like a sign on the front.
Are you able to provide the information about the corner?
I don't want to blow up my cheesesteaks, but I want it to be just
you want to keep them
succeeding. So they need my business. And I'm happy to see me.
Yeah, you get to be the kingpin of this this corner cheesesteak. So I like that you're like, I don't even know the corner. I don't even know the meat. It's not cheese they're not using. It's something else.
I don't even think it's a storefront. Yeah. It's one of those cylindrical stores with the lid on top of it.
But yeah, trash can.
As far as main brand ones go, Delco cheesesteaks is my favorite.
Yeah, yours is sort of an undercover like speakeasy spot where it just has the word Subway on the front of it, right?
no longer eat there. Which is right.
Oh, I'm serious. Yeah, right. For those of you listening,
I'm a Jersey Mike's guy now.
Wow. Do you want me to go tell your Subway guy on 29th Street?
Go ahead. I doubt Subway's still there, but yeah, man.
People get a Subway meatball sub every day before our show that we did at the People's Improv Theater for 10 plus years. And every day I'd be like, that's disgusting. And the guy gave you like one free one, right, over the course of that 10 years.
Yeah.
And you're saying one free meatball, right, that he just put in Pete's ad?
He would, yeah. Hey, I'm retiring, brother. Here's your meatball. You remember me.
You got your punch card. Buy 100, one free. Let's talk about Heather, because there's some interesting stuff going on with her this episode. The therapist girlfriend. Beyond the fun little date that she goes on with Matt.
It was a sex date.
It is a sex date, yeah. What, Pete?
Was it a fun date?
Yeah, they have some good flirting going on. I liked it. They have a good relationship. Still think she's going to die based on this, but I guess we'll see.
100%.
But we do get her doing the book talk, which her book is called Live Without Fear, which seems very pointed. And then she's going to do a book on vigilantes. That shouldn't complicate things at all. But I thought that was very fun.
What was her title? Like The Mask or something, you know?
Yeah, something like that. It's
where I feel like, did you find Daredevil's mask and are writing a book about it?
There's definitely like an indication there that maybe she has designs on Matt more than romantic, but yeah, exactly. I guess we don't know at this point. But the more pointed thing is we have somebody, a kid comes up and wants to get a book signed, say he's in trouble. And she gives him her email so they can set up a therapy appointment. That actor is Hunter Dewan, which people probably know from Wednesday. He plays the character Percy on there, and he's been in a bunch of other things. And he's usually a weirdo creep. Any thoughts on that?
Well, he's one of Kingpin's staff, right?
No. That's the second guy.
Guy in line. Okay.
Yeah, the second guy is Kingpin's right-hand man, and that leads into the second scene we'll talk about, but right before that is the weirdo kid.
Yes, and maybe we don't. This is a main character that we have said the name of so far, and it is big in the comics, so maybe we don't want to tee it up too much, but I thought this was cool, and I'm excited to see it go forward.
Yes, it was very funny to me to be like, he just kind of shows up, is a very recognizable face. They don't reference it at all. And in the credits, he's called Bastion or something like that. So I don't know. We will see. For anybody, yes, if you've listened to the first podcast, you could probably intuit who we think this is. But which is a different take on the character for the comics, so I'm sure we'll talk more about that. But let's talk about the second scene where it turns out that Heather has accepted new clients, which are Vanessa and Wilson.
What about the tea? We get to sit in on their therapy session.
I love this. Just that in the goes developing against all the relationship
rules of therapy. You know what I mean?
It does. Usually on TV, they never show you a therapy scene because it would be an invasion of privacy.
That's right.
Yeah.
But we get to sit in.
I thought this was great, just in terms of continuing to find different tones for Vincent D'Onofrio to play as the Kingpin, getting to find out a little bit more about his relationship with Vanessa. Justin, you're kind of holding your head. Did you not feel the same? You don't like therapy scenes.
Or you're just stressed out by couples therapy? Is that what you're kind of, reliving some nightmares?
No, it's fine. I love it. It's fine. I enjoy it.
I'm here to save my marriage. What?
Yeah. Whoa. Who are you yelling at in that scenario?
I was just channeling my inner world. Kingpin.
It's not that when I first saw this, I was like, oh, so Sopranos, like going so hard Sopranos, which I actually think that's an unfair judgment to throw in here.
Yeah.
I feel like that's something we talked a lot about on what show was it? Where it was going. Penguin, where it was like so hard Sopranos. I think I have a little bit of a taste in my mouth for that. So I think my early judgment is a little harsh, but I do think this is a good way to keep our character pool tight while exploring the Vanessa Thick Wilson side of the show, because I think it would be hard to keep injecting that in to other areas, and this is a nice way to dive deep quickly.
I agree, because it was a great way to catch us up, because we had so many questions about their relationship and what's going on that we got a lot of answers here in a good way that fits well with the show. Instead of one person kind of telling us their side, it was like we got to kind of be in the room. So I kind of laud the show.
And then we have to choose sides, so eventually.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be tough. I mean, who do you choose there?
What team are you on? Wilson and Vanessa?
I got to get more information first, but yeah.
Oh, you haven't spent enough time with these characters yet? Justin,
I was Team Vanessa, but now she's all mob style, like doing horrible things. And
Wilson is our mayor, so, you know.
Yeah, and he's fixing potholes and making a difference in the world.
Oh, my God. And I've never seen a bad mayor of New York, so I trust this guy implicitly.
And there's nothing better to fix your marriage than say you did a good job at work.
Yeah.
I know that for a fact.
Yeah. The other thing that I really like about this plot line is it ties Heather closer to everything rather than her being the girlfriend on the side who's like, Matt, where are you going? What are you doing? Which is the mode that happens every time with normal human girlfriend and every.
Well, you tried dating, somebody who's a superhero. But I'm tired, Alex.
I'm tired of that. Yeah. So giving her something beyond that, tying her to another potential villain in that first scene, tying her to Wilson and Vanessa in the second scene, I thought was really good.
Well, let me throw this out there. It's interesting to me that we've talked about this show for a long time now, and we've barely spoken about a character named Matthew Murdock, the main character. We've truly barely spoken about him. Mm-hmm. And, that's good. That's a good thing, I think, in this show right now. We get some nice moments, but this show is really setting a big table for us all to sit at for this season and then the second season that's coming straight on the heels. We should talk about a news story, perhaps, on the way out the door that came out about season two of this show that was interesting for our conversation.
Yeah.
I like the moment where Matt has now been really sort of fretting this devil horn. Like, he's, like, clearly got in his pocket. It's the paint has come off it between these two episodes. He's, like I feel like rubbing it. It's like a stress item for him. And that, I love it. Yeah, fidget spinner. It's such a small choice, but it's a great one, I thought.
Well, maybe part of the reason that we're not talking about Matt that much, I mean, I think two reasons. One, there's an inevitability of what's
die.
The inevitability to what is going to happen to him. It's just a matter of time before the daredevil comes out. And so we know that. We know what's going on. So what this episode, I think, very effectively does is let him be on that track and let everything represent that and everything come out of Daredevil and his journey. But spend some time to flesh out the supporting cast. You know, we see Cherry do a little bit of investigation.
Yeah, Cherry.
We see some stuff with Kirsten.
Cherry
in terms
baby.
Of,
and the new hero of the show, Hawk.
Who is Hawk?
The lawyer, special lawyer.
Hawkbird.
They call him the Hawk.
Yes, right, the Hawk. I do like him. He's a good
strong naming job here.
Yeah. Yeah. But all of that, like, they're setting it up as a trial procedural, which is a format that we all know very well from decades of television and movies. They're fleshing out the supporting cast, giving them more things to do. And that's great, because this is also not to, like, throw other Marvel TV under the bus, but a lot of what it does is focus just on that title character, and everybody else is like, title character, what are you doing? Like, it just all pyramids up into them. Here, we know Matt. We've watched Matt for three seasons so far. So he's not stepping to the back, but he can be the thing that everything pivots around. But we need the rest of that to feel fully fleshed out too. And that's what I feel we're getting here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Any other moments from the episode we should be talking about?
I want to talk about, there was an interesting moment where we saw Fist's hands on his desk when he was being a mayor, and they are all kind of bloody knuckled. And I was like, ooh, I wonder if he's like punching walls or what he's kind of doing there. I felt like that was an interesting little tease that we haven't paid off yet.
Maybe he was playing bloody knuckles with like some local teens.
Oh, yeah. Probably visiting Staten Island, you know.
Yeah.
Well, that's another thing that I like about the show so far is there are things like that. Like, it's not mystery box in the way that a lot of other Marvel shows are, but there are details there that you catch onto that clearly do mean something. We are going to spit out in some way, but there's a confidence there and a respect for the audience's intelligence in terms of it not being like, ah, yes, that is a reference to Bloody Knuckles from issue 85 of Amazing Spider-Man. Just like, yeah, there's something there. We're going to find out and we'll see what it is.
Or the even worse TV version where we see a scene where he's like just on the street beating the shit out of someone and being like, ah, my knuckles are all bloody now. I've got to go to my mayor job.
Yeah.
I want to talk about a big moment I feel like the show missed. Like, there was a big opportunity and we missed it. Mm. And I feel like you, gentlemen, as New Yorkers, can really feel this. There's a moment where Matt almost gets hit by a taxi cab and he doesn't do the thing where he hits the hood of the car and goes, hey, I'm fucking walking here. And I was like, come on, guys. That's a very big comedy moment we could have had there.
I do that 9-10 times a day.
I actually throw myself in front of cabs just so I could do that.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's a fun New York moment that only New Yorkers get
When I'm driving around New York, I like to get out of my car and push a pedestrian and say, like, hey, I'm driving over here.
And now, How do you drive around New York with all the gaping potholes that are everywhere?
Very hard. Very hard. I have a tank treads in my car, so I just always just driving down and up into the voluminous. We call them valleys. There's a whole culture down there.
That makes sense.
One last thing that I'll mention, getting back to that driving scene, do you think they could have gotten like a bigger car? It was very funny how stuffed everybody was into that tiny car together. But I don't know. Just on a realistic perspective.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe it's all a forced perspective to make Kingpin seem even bigger.
I would like to talk about the ending scene and just how the kind of they stacked these oh shit moments, which I thought was really smart. First off, we got a really great fight scene in that kind of empty apartment, which was great because there's this moment where he's like, all right, get out of here. You know, he saves the kid. And I'm like, OK, he's going to go with him, but he stays. He stays to kind of confront them and is looking for a fight, I feel. And man alive, that was such a kind of like, oh, shit, get him out of here. They're coming. They're right at the door. Oh, shit. And then it's like, oh, we see the Punisher tattoo. Oh, crap. Now there's a fight. And then, like, he just screams. And it's just such a kind of like, wow, oh shit moment there that I felt like they did such a good job of stacking these moments towards the end of the show to get you excited for what's to come.
Well, let's go around the horn. What was the scream? What prompted the scream? What realization? What was he thinking about?
He's upset about his friend's death and was just kind of upset at himself.
Still foggy. That was still foggy.
Yeah. But I'm sure you guys have other thoughts.
My thought was, I did it. I did Daredevil stuff again. I'm trying so hard not to do this. And I think part of it, with the image they've dealt with in previous seasons, is he likes it. Like, that's something that he came around to realizing in the first three seasons, which he hates about himself, is that he's good at it. And he likes
really
it.
Good at it.
And knowing that he slipped back into that, that's like giving an addict heroin and being like, oh, well, man, this feels fucking awesome.
He's begging the guy. He's like, please stop. Please don't do this.
Please don't do this.
And he pulls out the gun. And I was like, dude, I know you're a superhero, but he's got a gun now. And then he
says to his buddy, like, well, kill him. And I was like, well, no other option here, my guy.
Oh, man.
But the whole
taking of the gun and breaking his wrist was so badass.
God damn.
I went from being like, I hate this show to, oh, God, this is good.
I mean, good. I love that. I mean, I don't often get caught up as hard as I did in that moment with just straight up violent scene. But, man, I was like right with him, like, yes, that's exactly. he got me.
But I was yelling out loud for sure.
To answer my own question, I feel like similar to you, Alex, like this was him being like, I am Daredevil and I have to do this. And even more frustratingly, there seems to be no other way to do this besides the way I do this.
Well, what's upsetting is he discovered that earlier in seasons where he tried not to be the Daredevil. He tried to rely on the law and it didn't work. And he had to. You know, so it's just kind of weird that he's still struggling.
It is a similar path, but I think that's superheroes are cyclical, right? Like, and as long as they hit that idea, but execute it in a different way, which so far I think they are. I hear you, Pete, but I don't know. I think it's working here so far because it does feel like in a different mode, in a different setting.
I
was just going to say two more things about the scene. One, love the move at the beginning where he unlocks the door and then just steps back a couple of feet and waits.
Yeah.
Great. Badass.
Very cool. And then the other thing is contrasting it with the fight scene at the beginning of the first episode, which really looked like garbage, to hear
where
it's crazy to have a fight scene of him in a Daredevil costume and be like, oh, that looks no good.
Yeah.
You hear he's out of costume, just in a suit, and it looks kick-ass.
Yeah, it looked awesome.
I think part of that is probably down to the direction and CGI versus not CGI or light CGI, probably, if anything. But it just feels so much more visceral and so much
practical.
More
real. It
felt
so
like the first run of episodes. But I do think one of the main reasons that first one looked a little rougher is because of the one-take look that they – because they didn't – do it in one take. They cut, but they had to hide the cuts, so there was CGI involved. There's a lot of, I think some of it, or a lot of it was on the volume, so like, it just, there were a lot of things working against it looking good, and this was, felt like they just made it.
One thing I wanted to kind of talk about that I thought was a little weird and didn't look as good is just the Matt doing a lot of just kind of listening. He's just in a lot of scenes being like,
that is his thing.
Yeah, yeah, I know. It is part of his skill set, but it's just funny because he's like, he's outside of church listening to a sermon. He's like in the streets being like, hey, are you going to get a call about this thing that I'm kind of stalking you about? It's just, I know that's kind of how he does it, but it's just kind of funny to see him.
I get what you're saying from a repetitiveness perspective, but like I said last episode, I would really urge anybody to try to like get the best sound setup you can, because even those scenes become so much more dynamic because, yeah, watching Matt just stand there on a street listening to stuff, whatever, but hearing it like fade in and out and go, you know, from left to right, etc., it's really cool. So,
yeah. It just looks a little weird. But also, what's funny is, like, if there was a blind guy standing in the middle of the street just kind of listening, I feel like someone would be like, hey, you lost money, you're all right. Like, you know, you need help? Because he's just standing there.
Yeah, I'm walking
there.
Here.
I'm listening over here.
Yeah, slap him on the forehead.
Yeah, like,
that's the forehead.
You glitching, bro?
It's the hood of the human brain, I always say. So
yeah.
Cool. Anything else to talk about with this episode?
Mm-hmm. No, I thought it was a good one, and you know the third one is a pattern. If that one's good and moves everything forward, we are moving.
Yeah. So you're saying the third one's going to suck, or you're saying if the third one's good, now we're
saying
moving.
That's the latter one.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay.
You wanted to bring up though before we go to our vision board the article about season two. Is that what you're?
Oh yes, today? Yes. There was a statement about season two that Karen and Foggy will return in season two, right? Am I saying that?
Yeah, no, that was it. It was Brad Winterbaum said on Brandon Davis's podcast, I believe, which was written up by, I want to say, EW or something like that.
Shouts to you with all that information.
I don't know.
Sources, that's how my brain works, naming the sources, bro.
But yeah, he is the head of Marvel TV, and he was like, he gave no specifics, but said, yes, Karen and Foggy will be back in season two. So Karen, we already talked about. That seems like a no-brainer. She has said she loved reading the scripts. So we kind of knew she was going to be back anyway. Foggy, I got to imagine it's a flashback thing. They're not going to do like some sort of resurrection.
Well, I wonder because like it's a, you know, we got to see Bullseye kind of like jolt back to life. I wonder if there's going to be a hand element to they're kind of...
Well, so let me throw this out to you. Let's say they do something where, surprise, we had to hide Foggy and pretend he was dead for this reason. Mm. That kind of sucks, I think.
I agree.
Like, he needs to be dead to power this storyline at this point, and they need to keep on that path.
I bet it's going to be a guilt-based flashback, a guilt-based imagination situation.
Yeah, or maybe like Muse is playing with his emotions a little bit, and he kind of, he paints something with Foggy, and it makes him kind of go through some dark shit, you know?
Oh, yeah, like Muse wears Foggy's skin. Oh, dude. Is what you're saying.
Christ, well, man. I mean, Vincent D'Onofrio
is
in it.
That's the first thing you think of?
Yeah, I've Vincent D'Onofrio is in this show. He was also in Men in Black, where he was a bug in a human suit. And I think the like
sugar
take...
water.
I knew you were going to do that.
Sugar water.
I knew you were going to do
we'll
that.
We'll take cues from it. It'll happen. I guess we'll see. We have a little time, obviously, until season two. So why don't we wrap up here by going to our vision board and talk about what you want to see or expect to see in episode three of Daredevil Born Again. Justin.
I want to see... another fight sequence like we saw in this episode, but longer. And maybe I've just got red meat in my mouth, but that was awesome. Let's go. And then I want to see the sort of lens of the show narrow a little bit more around Matt. We've got so much happening now. I think we can start to really get after Matt and put him through the paces, which is what we love to do with Daredevil.
Yeah.
So I kind of got two thoughts on this. I got what my heart wants and what I think is going to happen. I really feel like we're going to kind of, since we saw Matt slip a little bit, I think in the next episode, we're going to see Fisk slip a little bit. And then that kind of going back and forth and them kind of struggling with, you know, can I do this? And what does that mean for the other one? Like, are they going to catch me doing this? But what I would love to happen is we get Punisher in the next episode, since we got the Punisher tattoo. But I don't know if they pull that trigger so quickly. Yeah,
but nice. I bet we get one more episode. I think it needs to point a little bit harder.
So you think maybe there'll be a bullet with like a, you know, we just see like a bullet with the Punisher.
Maybe we see Punisher end of ep. But I think, because, I mean, like I just said, there's so much going on now that I think Daredevil needs to be out there when we see the Punisher.
Yeah, I'm okay with them slow playing it the way that they are. Yeah. You know, my very boring answer to what I want to see next episode is more of this in terms of this episodic structure, the way that they're hitting it, making actual TV. That's
bigger potholes. Come on.
That's what counts. And also explain how the BB report works, because I don't get it.
I think what would be interesting, though, speaking of the Punisher, is because they had such a great conversation on that rooftop about, like, you're one bad day away, you know, like, maybe Murdoch is kind of struggling with not putting on the mask, and maybe the Punisher helps him kind of find it.
Oh, again. You think it gives him, like, one good day?
Yeah, he's like, hey, you know what?
Nice.
Why don't we just have a nice day in the city together?
Amusement park.
Yeah, they're getting pizza, hanging out in Central Park, you know?
It's like the opening credits to a 90s sitcom.
Sorry, you think the Punisher's first move is going to take somebody to Central Park?
Wow.
Where's a good time?
Yeah.
I have an idea. Well,
the last great time I had.
If you want to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub.
Also, we do a live show.
Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about Daredevil, Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, stay marvelous.
What am I going to do? Move to Boston, open up a chowder baked bean house, get in a fight with my cousins all the time?
Hey, cuz.